If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Ooh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to this week's Why Blank Lost, which magically transforms into Why Blank One because it's the finale edition. I'm David Bloomberg, and along with my co-host Jessica Lewis, we suddenly turned into prediction wizards over the second half of the season.
We really did. That pagonging really helped us out, didn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we got all of our final five predictions right when it came to who was booted when, following our last three correct vote predictions for a total of eight in a row. I mean, okay, so some people might say things were a little bit predictable near the end, but I still say we take credit for it.
I think we should definitely take credit for it since I always do so badly with my predictions. I'll take credit. I definitely will. And you should too.
Definitely. Come on. This is me you're talking to.
I know. And it's terrible. I mentioned this before, but I did so good at my predictions except my winner. Like Tommy, I had finishing third. I had Lauren finishing second. All of my top five were correct, except my winner pick, of course.
Yeah, well, you know, almost doesn't count.
I know. I'm so upset. But everyone knows this about me. I'm very bad at making predictions. So, yes, we did great towards the end.
Yeah. Now, I do have to admit, the scenes of Tommy and Dean congratulating themselves while saying Nora couldn't win made me a little worried for a couple minutes that somehow she would, and the editors were kind of rubbing it in their faces. But then the jury reaction to Nora, you know, right near the beginning, confirmed my original thought that no, that wasn't going to happen.
Well, how about just Dean in general? Like the entire beginning of the finale, when Dean was just all of a sudden a player and someone who was doing things that people were noticed. It was just crazy. All of a sudden, it completely flipped on its heels, and that was not the Dean we saw for most of the season.
Well, that's because it wasn't the Dean we saw for most of the season.
I know.
As we'll talk about.
I know. You know.
He just suddenly blossomed.
There was a lot of craziness happening. I was really confused when the episode started. What is happening right now? But
yeah,
we will get there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I do have a few I told you so's for people, not for you, for other people.
Okay.
Because I always said Sandra and Rob would not enter the game. I always said they will not vote. Some people on Twitter kept insisting that they were sure that one of these two things was going to happen. And I stood firm. I said, no, it's not going to happen. They're not going to do that. They took this oath and so on and so forth. No, no, you just wait. And it didn't happen.
It would have been terrible. You know,
it would have. And so the producers did one thing right.
Yes. Although the winner never even talked to them for any of their lessons. So Tommy seems to be rubbing that in their faces just a little bit.
Well, yes. So anyway, we have plenty to talk about this week, as you can imagine. After we hit a few discussion points about the finale and the reunion itself, we'll follow our usual path, but with all five people from the finale. We'll look at their games by comparing them to my rules so we can evaluate how they did using all the information available from what we saw on TV, plus interviews, plus clips from CBS All Access. And, you know, if you're this far into the season and haven't caught up on the latest version of my rules yet, you can still do it at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. So go ahead and get that done. I mean, the season's over now.
Or
you can get the shorter and much more colorful version of the rules in poster form at tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter.
Yes. And if you want to order, you really need to do it now, because I think we might have four posters left of this round of ordering. And then we will be revisiting the ordering of the poster. So there will be more, but things might switch up just a little bit. But yes, if you like to order, get on it. It's only $20. I'll get them mailed out to you. And they are beautiful posters. They look great in a frame. only $20. And if you are outside of the United States, I will certainly work with you to get it mailed to you. Just contact me in my DMs.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't try to eBay through if you're out of country. Just go straight to Jessica.
Yes.
And now, obviously, it's too late to get a poster as a holiday gift for someone else. I mean, unless you're getting them a late gift. But if nobody got you one, you should order it for yourself right now. I could even recommend a frame for anyone who's interested if you hit me up on Twitter. So, you know, if you want a poster, do it now.
Yes.
All right. As I mentioned, we have a few things to talk about before getting into the five players in the finale. The first is a programming note. As we mentioned last week, we will once again have a postseason question and answer podcast. If you have any questions for us about this season, you can go ahead and tweet them at us or comment in the Facebook post for any of these podcasts.
I think that's a great idea. And if you want to include your name, we'll might just mention you too on the podcast, which would be super fun.
We'll probably mispronounce it.
Yes.
You know, we can at least promise that.
Yes.
Now for the game related items, we're going back to something we talked about last week. Which is how the producers purposely put in the clip of Sandra and Rob talking about how a woman will win, knowing about everything that was going to happen. And the only words I can use to describe this move are completely oblivious. I guess we shouldn't be surprised since they seemed utterly unprepared for the reactions of fans to everything that went on. I just don't know how you can put that clip in there in these circumstances.
Yeah, it's a really big bummer, honestly. I was listening to Dr. Mike, and I think that he described the season rather well in that the deck kind of seems stacked for a woman to win the season, just because there were so many strong women, and I have to agree with him on that it really did seem like we were going to have a woman take the season, especially how Jeff was talking about all of the women on the season. And then how we saw a lot of them kind of working together. There was a lot of talk about a woman's alliance, and then that turned into a thing. And overall disappointing that we kind of got led down that path to then not have that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand why they put that in. It just utterly baffles me. But I do want to mention that I thought the way Jeff Probst in the show addressed the sexual harassment situation at the reunion was finally well done.
Yes, I would agree.
He said they intended to do the right thing, but they screwed up and have learned. And if this happened today, they would handle it much differently. This is what we've been waiting to hear from them. And I don't know why they waited for the reunion. I don't know why they didn't say it right away. You know, at least the parts about, hey, we've instituted all these new rules. We started right away for season 40, you know, and then going forward, it'll be like this. Why not do that from the very start? Why? I don't know. I guess it just goes all back to they screwed up.
And it's possible that they didn't really realize the visceral response so many people would have to watching this play out. I was even surprised at how much of a reaction people had. I mean, people were very, very invested in this, and not that people shouldn't have been, but I think maybe CBS thought, well, people will respond and they'll talk about it and then we can explain. But I think once they saw the response that was occurring, they probably should have stepped in much sooner to say something, because people were kind of begging CBS to comment, to say something. But they finally did. I think they did a great job. They gave Kelly a voice, which was wonderful. She had an opportunity to sit and talk to Jeff and say whatever she wanted to say. So that was great too, that they took a moment for that, because I think that was another issue a lot of people had, was that she never got to have a voice when she was sitting there in tribal council watching this be spoken about, and she couldn't speak up then.
Yeah, and she should definitely be proud, because she did a great job, you know, in a high pressure situation with the spotlight, both literally and figuratively, on her.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm glad they addressed it, they talked about it, and they're making changes. I think that's good.
Yeah, yeah. I can't undo what they already did, but hopefully, you know, it will help bring back or restore some trust from some of the people that they lost over their poor handling of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so.
So, all right, moving back to game issues, I am very glad we can stop hearing about how nobody who was taken to Final Three instead of winning their way there has won.
Yes.
That's always been a false association of causation that basically has things absolutely backwards, because typically a goat is brought in that position while the person who won immunity has picked actual threats to face off on fire in order to knock someone out. So it wasn't that being brought along made it impossible for you to win. It was that the person who won immunity knew you could not win, so they brought you along.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everybody was treating this the reverse, you know, of causation. And no, it was never that way. And it took Nora winning immunity and using her rather strange logic to finally put an end to this.
But still strange that she did take Tommy over Dean.
Well, like I said, strange logic, yes.
I mean, and Tommy was very aware of it, too, because he pointed out how many times that she said that she can beat Dean, but she can't beat Tommy, so Dean's making fire. Something like that. Her logic definitely was flipped, but she took Tommy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's Nora.
Yeah, that's true.
So. All right, well, Tommy not only won after being brought along to the Final Three, but he did so without winning immunity, without ever going to the Island of the Idols or finding an idol, and without any advice from Rob and Sandra. How did he do it while the others were either voted out or couldn't beat him at the end? It's finally time to find out why Tommy won and Dean, Nora, Lauren, and Janet lost.
Oh, I'm excited. Well, I am excited. All right, well, there's so many interesting components to Tommy's game, and I won't spoil it, but I'm excited to discuss it because I think it's a really great representation of a new and old type of person winning the game.
New old school.
That's right. I love it.
All right. Well, we will begin, of course, at the first rule, which talks about the need to scheme and plot. And very often I note that this is the most important rule, which is why it's the first. And Tommy came along to reemphasize this point. His game was a strategic and social one that involved forging bonds and alliances with just about everyone. As he told Entertainment Weekly after winning, "My best move was making every single person believe I was their number one. Every single thing, I was kind of calling it. I really had a hold on the game." Indeed, we heard that exact thing from Rob and Sandra. Everyone said Tommy was their number one. Elaine said it in her exit interviews, along with calling him the Big Red Kingpin. Dean told Mike Bloom that it was crazy for Tommy to promise Final Three to so many people, and they actually believed it. He would tell Dean, "I'm going to talk to Lauren, but don't be upset. I'm just telling her I'm taking her to Final Three, but I want to take you."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was telling that to at least Dean, Lauren, Janet, and Nora. Indeed, Tommy said in interviews that he fell in love with the original type of Survivor game where you have to build relationships, and he's glad he played an old school game, and it was unbelievable that he had everyone thinking they were his number one.
Yes.
But that was what he relied on because he knew that winning immunity only kept you safe for one tribal council while his strategy was long term.
I love this approach so much because it's something that you don't often see any Survivor player have the ability to do, because there's that game of telephone. You talk to one person and say, "Well, I'm going to tell you this and I'm going to go talk to that person. Don't worry about it." But it always comes back full circle and people end up being upset or frustrated, or can I really believe them because they're saying this to the same person over here. For whatever reason, Tommy was really able to convince all of them of the same thing, even though it was all a bunch of lies. And he did it with a smile on his face. He did it in a friendly way. And he did it in a way that everyone sitting in that jury wasn't upset with him. Nobody was angry. Nobody felt hurt. They were all impressed that he was able to pull it off. So he really is a great example of an old school Survivor game where the foundation of those relationships becomes so significant that that's what can end up winning you the game, because the jury that is selecting the winner is looking at three people and knowing, I really like that guy. Like, I really like Tommy. And Jamal even said that just purely because they feel like they were friends, he was considering voting for Tommy just because he felt like Tommy made him feel like he was a friend. That was all it took. And I think a lot of people miss that type of strategic gameplay when they come in to play Survivor. They think it has to be very cutthroat and dangerous.
Yeah, Tommy said he was making real connections so everyone would be comfortable coming to him and he could play the middle, and that he was usually the one picking who would go home. He said in his interview with Rob that he wanted to be in the center, and he accomplished that because everybody was always telling him what was going on. Now, good examples include when Janet told him about the idol, and then Dean told him about the idol nullifier,
mm-hmm.
or when Missy was targeting him and Elaine told him, or when the goat army was going after him and Dean spilled the beans. Tommy was in the middle of everything. Even when he wasn't driving strategy, secrets were being handed over to him.
Yes, which is incredible that so many people felt like they could confide in him. And people continued to confide in him, even when in that particular tribal council, I find it fascinating that Dean, in front of everybody, was confiding in Tommy. And it didn't seem to affect his ability to continue to move forward in the game. Because you would think at that point, there would be some type of a realization that, hey, Tommy was being targeted by this group of people. And now Dean is sharing all of our secrets with Tommy. Like, what's the deal with Tommy? Like, nobody came together and then started to talk about Tommy and had a realization or an epiphany. It was almost like everybody then needed to apologize and win Tommy back. Like, Nora was even doing that during that tribal council, like trying to gain favor again. So it was very interesting how everyone continued to gravitate to him.
Well, yeah, he was everybody's number one. So they all wanted to, you know, if they couldn't get rid of him, then they had to be with him.
Right.
You know,
but nobody talked about it. Like, nobody said to each other, like, they didn't compare notes, which is amazing that no one was comparing notes ever about Tommy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, the hallmark of, you know, some of the really good Survivor players over time is that they can somehow tell everyone, hey, you're not my number one. You're my number one. You're my number one. And they don't talk to each other because they have them convinced that, like I said earlier, okay, I'm going over to talk to Lauren, but don't worry, I'm lying to her. I'm telling you the truth.
Right. It's incredible.
You know,
it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Now, Tommy probably had the opposite of a made for television type of game.
Yes.
But we saw snapshots of his strategy along the way. So, for example, in a secret scene at the merge, Tommy immediately sought out Dean to meet and talk to. He knew Dean was on the bottom and was desperate, you know, which was the sort of person Tommy wanted to bring in. And then on the flip side, at that same time, Kelly came to rejoin Tommy in their old alliance, and Tommy presented an idea that she shot down because she thought it wasn't good for her. She was right. He had a choice to either, you know, go with her or stick with his new tribal alliance because he believed that would be better for him. And as we said when we were talking about the merge episode, Kelly was right to think that it wasn't good for her, but wrong to tell Tommy to his face. Tommy said in the pregame that he planned to make allies, but if he got the slightest bad feeling, he'd cut them.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived up to that plan.
Yeah, and he did it in a way that never rubbed anybody the wrong way. It was almost like they understood the move or they understood why he was doing it. He was very kind of even keel about how he did it, but also very strategic and very specific in the decisions he was making.
Yeah. And, you know, it went all the way till this finale. You know, he kept Janet and Elaine around as social shields and then voted them out at exactly the right time to avoid taking their place and becoming the next one targeted. And then he capped it off by telling Nora he couldn't make fire, even though he could.
Mm-hmm.
And as he told Rob, convinced her to take him, even though Dean was more beatable. He swore on his life that he'd take Nora if he won immunity, you know, when he was like making a deal with her, which, well, of course he could make that swear because he was going to do it anyway.
Right. And also he took it even a step further with the fire making by getting in Lauren's head, when he was teaching, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, both Dean and Lauren how to make fire, and telling Lauren that Dean was killing it while he was making the fire, which was then affecting her negatively, and she was getting flustered and didn't want to keep trying, even though she did keep trying, but it got in her head. And I think that that is taking it to a different level, because it appears as if he's being supportive and it appears as if he's in your corner. And really, he's just messing with you. So he just had such a great way of flipping a script and presenting his gameplay in a way that we don't often see, because he can't usually pull it off. He was very good at utilizing the people around him and kind of centering his game around how he can use them. You know, how can I get Lauren to actually not win fire, because I don't want her sitting next to me in the final three. And he figured out how to do that with the people that were left.
Yeah. And then Dean even credited Tommy with the move of teaching him how to make fire, which was not exactly the smartest thing to tell the jury. But, you know, and this moves on to Dean's strategy. Well, he kind of had an up and down relationship there with the idea of scheming and plotting. You know, he started off rather poorly because we tell players they need to start making alliances right away. And as Ronnie said about Dean in his interviews, it was like pulling teeth talking with Dean. It was so hard. And then he added that Dean in the early goings was quiet and you couldn't get much off of him. And Mike Bloom talked about it, too, because he was out there at the time. And he said the same thing. Dean was just, you know, not talking at the time. Even later on in the game, when Rob asked Elaine if she was working with Dean, she said, who can really work with Dean? You know, and then she indicated he said like two words and then would fire off a one liner and leave. It's really difficult to strategize without talking to people. And Dean himself realized when he got the final tribal council, as he said in interviews, that he was playing from behind the moment he stepped foot into final tribal council, because it was a little too late from a gameplay perspective.
Yes.
Quote, quote, I mean, there were folks on the jury literally at that final tribal council who I didn't talk strategy with at all.
Yeah, that's bad, because that's not the time to be catching up on that. Well, and I think it's interesting that he ended up struggling so early on in the beginning with the inability to talk to people, because I do feel like in his pregame interviews, there was a lot more of that kind of swagger that we saw towards the end that came out in his pregame interviews. And one of the things that he did specify when he was asked, which Survivor contestant are you most like? And he wrote, and he said, Wendell for his quiet leadership. And my notes to myself was, will he be quiet? Because he just didn't seem to have that about him in his pregame. But then once he got on the island, it was like he shut right down and really wasn't interested in communicating like we saw Wendell do with people, and really did keep people at bay and didn't really try to make those connections until he absolutely had to, which was at the end, which was really too late when you're playing with someone like Tommy, who's got everybody in their back pocket.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, none of this is to say Dean didn't do any scheming and plotting.
Right.
You know, after Kelly saved him with an idol, he repaid her by helping to vote her out. He realized that even though she saved his game life, he needed to find himself a solid path forward, and said in interviews that it was his best decision all game. Prior to that, they were having secret conversations, but he felt if he stayed with her, he was going to be on the bottom of her alliance and would be dispensable. So making that move brought him into a better position with his original Lyro and also with Tommy and Lauren. And of course, there was also, you know, when he spilled the beans to Tommy about the Goat Army plan. At the time, we chalked it up to Dean not being confident in Nora, which would have been completely reasonable given the circumstances. But he said in interviews that it was a bit deeper than that, though still revolving around Nora. He felt she would flip back with Lauren and Janet if they succeeded in voting out Tommy. So he would have been right back on the bottom.
Yes. And I do think his choice to stick with Tommy and Lauren does show that he was thinking strategically about that decision, because that's two people. So that's two votes that if you are with them, then potentially you've got the numbers to make the votes end up in a way that you want them to end up. You know, whatever you want to have happen, you've got three people instead of just, I've got this one other person over here. So I do think he was at least being strategic in those decisions, in, he knew Lauren and Tommy were a tight duo, and he was using that to his benefit.
Yeah. And, you know, it was either that or rely on Nora.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, yeah, I guess, you know, we might as well move on to Nora because, well, it's difficult to look at her strategic gameplay because her idea of strategy didn't seem to be strategy. You know, early in the game, Gordon Holmes tweeted in all caps, "Why would you pitch a blindside that would destroy your alliance to an outsider long before you actually have to go to tribal?" And I responded, also in all caps, "Because Nora is crazy and not a good strategist." And, you know, that really was the answer to a number of things we saw her do, and not just from my perspective. Karishma told Rob it was very frustrating to play with Nora because you never knew what she'd do, and from a game perspective, you want people who are predictable. Jamal said, "Nora is unreliable in the game. She doesn't get it." Elaine said, "My concern is that Nora is such a fruit loop that she won't stick to the plan." And then from the jury, Elaine also said, "I don't think there's any strategy to how you played the game at all."
Oh, how about, Dean's, oh, go ahead. You got more? I got one too.
Oh, yeah. Dean said, "Nora is totally confused. She can't even think through numbers straight. It's easy. Two is more than one." And then he also said, "Nora has a plan. The problem is that Nora is absolutely crazy and I think a little bit delusional." All right, so what do you have to add to that pile of quotes about her?
Well, this was my favorite quote I heard. This came from Janet in her Ponderosa video. Her Jury Speaks video, excuse me. She said that Nora pulled off enough crazy so people didn't think about her, and now she's sitting in the final three. And I think that's a great explanation of what we saw. I don't want to speak ill of Nora because I think Nora is an incredible human being. She's obviously, like, very talented, very strong. I mean, God, she won three, you know, individual immunity challenges, like truly impressive. But yeah, her game really was to play the crazy card. And
I don't think she was playing.
Okay. So let's say this. So she's not playing the crazy card, but she was very clear that this is who I am and I'm going to be who I am. And she didn't hide that fact. She knows that she's vocal. She knows that she's boisterous. She knows that she will filibuster and, you know, talk a lot at people. And she owned all of those things. But it certainly didn't help her in the gameplay that you want to have someone who's playing Survivor with you have, because it came off as all over the place and crazy. And in Nora's world, it was just Nora being Nora, and this is how she is. But unfortunately, sometimes when you're playing Survivor, you got to control a little bit of that. So it doesn't appear to be crazy, but that's what it looked like to everybody, that it was just crazy.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we're still in rule one here. Nora said in the finale, "I look back and I can see the strategy." But, well, Janet said in her Jury Speaks video, Nora thought she played a strong strategic game when she was carried to the end.
Mm.
And Nora herself also said in interviews, "I'm not a good liar, and I'm actually proud of not being a good liar." And she added, "I'm going to play an open game. I'm going to show you my cards. I'm going to tell you what's going on, and I'm going to play this game in a way that you've never seen before. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to backstab you. When I have to walk away from you, I'm going to let you know. I'm going to say this is why we have to part ways, but I care for you, and I'm sorry. No one's done it like this before." And, well, she's right that nobody has done it that way before, or at least they haven't done it successfully, because that's not how scheming and plotting is done. It's
right.
Pretty much the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she would overshare. She would tell people exactly what was happening. And I feel like there's a misconception in Survivor that you want to work with somebody who's open and honest and telling you everything that's going on. But in reality, that doesn't work in the game of Survivor, because then everybody knows what you're doing and people will use that to their benefit to try to get votes from you or get information from you. If everyone knows that Nora will tell you exactly what's going on, Nora's never going to keep a secret. Nora's not going to be someone that you can say, "Listen, here's how the vote's going down. Don't say anything." So in the Survivor world, the person who wants to share with you is not necessarily the best person to align yourself with, because if they're telling you, they're going to tell that person, and they're going to tell that person, and they're going to tell that person. And they think, as Nora did, that she's just playing an open book game. But really, Survivor sometimes needs to be a closed book. You need to not be telling everybody what your secrets are. So you can pull off moves and you can make things happen. But if you've got Nora in the mix, the secret's going to be out.
Yeah, I mean, she was generally more interested in contributing around camp than pretty much anything else. And it was something we saw throughout the game. She said in interviews, "I did not convince that group who's very heady and they're very focused on the strategic play. And that's where Survivor is today. They don't care about outwit, outlast, outplay, and who did the best in all those areas like challenges. They care about who is that person that is moving the game. And they're the strategist and they're the maestro behind the moves." Yeah, Nora, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And people who watch Survivor know that.
Right.
And it's not just where Survivor is today, but has been for a long, long time.
Yes.
Because you know what? You remember Richard Hatch? He didn't win because of challenges. And yeah, outwit, outplay, outlast does not include out coconut. The whole camp life concern went away long ago. I've mentioned it before that I used to have a rule about it, but I dumped it years and years ago because it became so unimportant. She just didn't have the Survivor knowledge to understand what kind of strategy she needed to pursue. And, you know, I know that a lot of what I just said may sound harsh, and I know a lot of people love Nora, but what she brought to the show was entertainment, freewheeling. She brought a lot of laughs. She did not bring strategy.
Yeah. And the thing that ends up happening too, I feel, if you are a provider, when you are out there playing the game, it is appreciated, but it also gets taken advantage of because the person who's the provider is the one that's expending energy to provide for the camp with those individuals who are sitting around, not collecting food and not providing, if you will, because they're trying to save their energy so they can do other things, or they're spending their time strategizing. So if you're too focused on collecting coconuts, chopping coconuts, I think someone used the term, she chopped 27 coconuts and then chopped another 27. If they had that many coconuts, I'm jealous. But if that's your focus,
trust me, Fiji is out of coconuts now.
Oh, I think they ship them in. They provide these coconuts. It's like the coconut fairies out there. That's what happens. It's amazing how coconuts just appear, just like bamboo. It just appears. But I digress. But I do think that Nora ended up focusing on, as you said, the wrong things. You know, she was sweet to everybody, and she talked to everybody.
Not everybody.
Well, but someone did say that, you know, Nora will know the name of your dog. She'll know the color of your eyes. Like, she will know those little details about you because she'll ask because she's curious. But I also think Nora likes to talk, so she's going to have those conversations with you. She's probably going to be chopping coconuts while she's doing it in the rain, you know, and spinning at the same time. But that's Nora. And that's great if you want to be that way. But at the same time, she was spending so much time on this one part of it, maybe getting to know people and details about people and chopping coconuts, but not the actual gameplay that was happening at the same time. And that's why people were just kind of bringing Nora along, because, well, she's just another vote and we'll deal with her later. We'll get to her later. And I think it's interesting because Jamal talked about how he warned everybody way at the beginning. Like, if we don't take care of Nora now, she's going to be here in the final three. And she was, because she ended up being that person that people wanted to sit next to.
Well, right, right. And I don't know to this day, to right now, I don't know that she understands the strategy of the game. And this, you know, how that differs from what she did, because I think even in her post game interviews, she was still, you know, a lot of those quotes that I just mentioned were from post game interviews, and she still thinks that way. It'll be interesting if she does a deep dive with Rob. Does she get it?
It's going to be like 4 hours if she does.
Well, yes, yeah, and if she returns, which a lot of people think is a given. So maybe I should just say, when she returns, is she going to play Survivor Or is she still going to try to bend Survivor to what she erroneously believes it should be?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough balance. It's certainly a tough balance because what she was doing is great for the tribe because providing is a wonderful component of it if it is not your central focus. Your central focus needs to be gameplay, and then you can work on providing. And I'll just use a quick example of something I've probably mentioned before, but we had a very similar situation in the season when I was playing, and one person in particular was like legit just chopping coconuts like there was no tomorrow. And we had tribal council coming, and all I wanted to do was talk to this person about what was going to be transpiring and what people were talking about. But he was spending a lot of time chopping coconuts and talking about stuff other than gameplay. I mean, yes, it was social. He was having conversations, but he was talking about stuff that had nothing to do with the vote that was happening that night. And sometimes you have to realize that just being a normal, good person when you're out there, I'm feeding people, making conversations, hanging out is great, except when you have to actually strategize and play the game. And you have such limited time out there when decisions need to be made, you know, because you'll have the immunity challenge and then immediately you're going to tribal council or you're going very soon after. Those conversations need to happen. And it's very important that it does. And sometimes you just got to put the coconuts aside and focus. And I think Nora thought that she could kind of still be seen as the provider. And then also that would be part of her strategy. But it's really not strategy. That's just providing food.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and we'll get to this later, but it wasn't even just providing. It was trying to pressure everyone else and shame everyone else if they weren't providing to the level that she believed they should be.
No, and I will say this, that is true. And it is frustrating when you are out there and people are consuming, but they are not helping in what is being consumed. Like they're not bringing anything to the table. And that is very frustrating. But if it frustrates you, you got to put a lid on it and not complain about it because you don't want to upset people. If it bothers you, it can bother you, but just move on and get over it and just make a little mental note of it. Maybe you can talk about it later with somebody, but don't spend so much time on it, making it an issue because it doesn't come across well and it could potentially negatively affect your game.
Yeah. Yeah. And we will get to that.
Yes.
So let's, you know, let's circle back. I want to go back to Nora's quote about people only caring about the strategist and the maestro. She continued by saying they want to know who that person is. And it was Lauren. And indeed, Lauren told Rob she ran the game. Mm. And we saw that as early as the Molly blind side, for which Lauren got full credit. And she completely deserved it because she spearheaded it perfectly.
Damn it, Lauren. I love you. I think you're incredible, but Molly was my winner pick.
Yeah, well. And then, you know, as the game moved along, she had a lot of the same connections as Tommy did, and maybe some that he didn't, such as with Missy. The two of them made a lot of their moves together, kind of like a Dominic and Wendell, but in this situation, one turned on the other before the final three.
Yes. And I think that was an expected thing that we weren't going to see another Dom and Wendell situation where we'd have two people. And I think we talked about it in the last podcast that Tommy won't be sitting next to Lauren because he doesn't want to have that situation where there's a potential splitting of the votes between the two of them. Because when you have to make that decision, and we saw it happen with Dominic and Wendell, if it's a tie, what does it come down to? Well, it could potentially come down to just who do you like better? And Lauren
could have come down to Nora.
Well, that's true. And who does Nora like better? Nora and Lauren were besties, right? That's, you know, that's the way that Nora described them. So I do think that Lauren did a great job in aligning herself with Tommy. And she picked someone that I think made sense because he and they were very similar in their approach because neither one of them was overly aggressive. They were very social. People liked them. So no one had any ill will towards either of them. And they didn't come across as this dynamic duo. They just kind of came across as likable people who seemed to be, you know, playing the game together, but there wasn't anything threatening about the way that they were doing it. So it was very smart and very strategic in the way that they actually worked together to not have people look at them and go, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about these two? Because they're so close. Where we saw immediately at the beginning, they were calling people out for being a trio. You know, you just talked about Lauren getting Molly out. Lauren was pointing that out to people, and then nobody pointed it out about the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, and you mentioned how they're, you know, similar, how similar they were, and that's why they were drawn to each other. And Lauren told Mike Bloom that after watching Survivor for 18 years, it becomes ingrained in you. And I think that was part of it. They had that same kind of older school type of mentality. And she was able to look at each person and say, how are they going to move in this game? And she certainly proved that she could do that in her Island of the Idols challenge when she was able to read off exactly who would play and who would eat.
Yes. And that was so incredibly impressive how she and Tommy pulled off that Jedi mind trick. That was amazing. That was really incredible.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk more about Lauren's situation when we get to the sixth rule, but there's a reason Tommy and Nora wanted her out before the final three, and her strategic gameplay was a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, everyone wanted one other person out even before Lauren, and that was Janet. Again, we'll talk more about that in the sixth rule, but in her case, it wasn't because of strategy. I know that Janet was part of the core alliance as things moved along, but we didn't see her as the one who was really directing the alliance.
Mm.
You know, one problem we have is something that was brought up in earlier RHAP podcasts this week, which is that it seems likely that Dan was a more significant part of the alliance, but the producers probably cut out a lot of him, not enough of him, in my opinion, but a lot of him. And, you know, with good reason. But for example, Janet told Rob that when she was on the outs, she had to fight to get back. And one thing she did was reconnect with her old ally, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also know that when Janet decided to vote out Dan because of his behavior, she said she was doing so despite the fact that it went against her strategic plan. And I'm certainly not criticizing, you know, that in this case. I'm just using it as an example of where she stood in the overall tribal alliance.
Yeah. And I think Janet was really good at recognizing kind of the role that she played and utilizing that as part of her strategy. You know, she understood that she was the older member on the tribe, that people kind of looked up to her in almost a motherly way. And she didn't act like a mother, but she provided that role that they kind of needed, I think. So she recognized that about herself, but she used it to benefit her game and form really great bonds with people as part of her strategy. And I know that's kind of getting into the fifth rule, but at the same time, I think it was very genuine that when she was making decisions about who she was going to be playing the game with and the decisions that she was going to be making, she was also very interested in the person and how that person can benefit her game as well. So I do think that she was kind of morphing everything together very nicely, which is why people ended up just genuinely loving her. I mean, in her Ponderosa video, it was like, it was just a beautiful thing to see how much people cared for her. And I think it was just because she came from a very genuine place while she was playing the game.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the older woman, typically, you know, Rob has talked about this a lot. If you are an older woman and you play the game and you are seen as the quote unquote mom, and then you get to the end, the jury often turns against you.
Yes.
Like, how could you vote me out? How could you do that? You were, you know, and they treat these players like they shouldn't have been playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if Janet had made it to the end, I do not think we would have seen that at all.
I don't think so either.
I think that she was that rare specimen who could have pulled that off.
She really was. Jack actually, I loved Jack's description of her. He called her a beautiful evolution. And I really think that is a incredible way to describe Janet, because she walked into this game having that aura about her. Everyone, oh, she's the oldest woman on the tribe, but she's this you badass lifeguard. So like, how is that going to play into everything? And she really owned everything about herself in such a great way, but she then used it in her strategy. I mean, even the fact that she was so great at making fire, she used that as part of her strategy because she recognized, I need to give them a reason to keep me around. You know, I don't mm-hmm. want it. I don't want that to be deemed as a threat that I can make fire, but I've got to give them a reason to keep me here because I understand how I'm walking into this game and what the perception of me is. And she did that and made fire right away. You know, so I think that Janet is a great example about how you can use who you are as part of your strategy in order to further yourself in the game.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. All right, well, we're about 45 minutes in and we've completed rule one.
Yes.
So I do want to let listeners know I do not expect every rule to take that long. So, you know, we this is not going to be a 6-hour podcast.
Just get some wine, sit back.
Yes.
Enjoy it.
I mean, that's what you're doing, right?
Absolutely.
All right. All right. So we move on to the second rule, which says not to scheme and plot too much or too obviously and not to backstab too soon. And I really don't have too much to say here for any of our five in the finale. And because one reason they all made it to the finale was because they didn't succumb to the contagious case of big move-itis that was sweeping through the camp.
Yes.
You know, we saw time and time this season that people who backstabbed too soon were voted out shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing that I think we might throw in here, but we've talked about it already, was Dean's play at Tribal telling Tommy what was happening. That seemed very aggressive, but there was a reason for it, which we know now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, it was kind of like, oh my God, what is happening? Because it was in front of everybody and it was calling everybody out. And it really kind of created this whole whirlwind, nasty effect that none of us enjoyed. But I mean, it was entertaining. But now I
and
do
he
think
he survived it
and he did survive. And so it's one of I think that was a little bit on the cusp because we thought, oh, God, this is a lot to be doing right now. But other than that, yeah, I think I agree with your assessment here.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of other on the cusp type things. I mean, Tommy and Lauren did have an obvious duo, which this rule says to avoid, mm-hmm. but nobody ever did anything about it.
Right.
And, you know, Lauren even said in interviews, Tommy and I even asked each other about this. Why didn't they try to get us out? My first reaction, if I see a power duo or twosome or whatever, just like Dean and Chelsea, we got to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one. And then the other, call it the cusp item, was, well, we already talked about Nora wanting to be open and straightforward, which is also a violation of this rule. In her mid-season interview with Josh, she said, I wasn't afraid to say, yes, I want women to band together. In that moment, I said, yeah, because why should it be a secret? Well, Nora, it should be a secret because this game is about secrets.
Right, right.
But, you know, it wasn't for her. Elaine said about her, she can't keep her mouth shut. Dang it, lady, you tell all your business all the time. And, you know, that is, you know, like, you know, we talked about it already in the first rule, but that is not keeping your scheming secret by any stretch of the imagination.
Exactly. And I do think that part of the reason why Tommy and Lauren were probably so good at lasting all the way through the game, essentially as a duo, is because neither one of them, and I've already talked about it, but they weren't aggressive in the way that they did it. I mean, Dom and Wendell, we saw this a little bit as well. Wendell was less aggressive than Dom. Dom started obviously very aggressive, I think, in his season, but he got it in check towards the end. And I think that probably helped them just kind of maintain their place in the tribe because they weren't overly aggressive about it. They did communicate with everybody, which I think is also the saving grace here as well, as they didn't cordon themselves off. And it wasn't just about those two. They had relationships with basically everybody and talked to everybody. So the idea of them being a twosome was much less noticeable because they did have so many relationships with so many other players.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. All right, well, before we go to the rest of the rules, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, if there are any in your area. If not, we'll be back even quicker.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're back. So let's go on to the third rule, because see, I told you they wouldn't all be as long as the first rule.
Right. We whipped through that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And this rule talks about being flexible. Now, we've already talked about how so many people were convinced Tommy was their number one, which gave him a ton of flexibility to pick and choose how to move forward. You know, that resulted in him getting really the absolute best possible final three situation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's something that I think is so key with this game. We've talked about it a lot, that idea of who do you want to sit next to at the end, and having an understanding of how you kind of line up with that person. Can I beat this person? How would the votes go down? What does the jury feel about this person? And the fact that he really had so many avenues that he could go down, because he had relationships with so many people, it truly gave him the best possible scenario of choosing, even though he was brought, you know, to that final three, if you will.
Technically.
But I know I'm using air quotes when I say that, but yeah, it was because of the relationships that he formed that enabled him to get there.
Right. You know, and Lauren was similarly situated, since she and Tommy were working so closely together. Dean also apparently had a lot of final two agreements, which gave him flexibility, but also came back to bite him in the end, which will cover more in Appendix B.
I agree. No, I think I really do feel like Dean is so difficult to really, at least for me, to kind of wrap my brain around, because someone on Twitter wrote that Dean is like the kid that cheats off of your test at school and gets a higher score than you. So I kind of feel like, I feel like that's a pretty accurate assessment of what we saw, you know, happening with Dean. I mean, do I think that Dean kept his options open? Absolutely. I mean, look what he did to Kelly. You know, Kelly saved him, and then he's like, bye, Kelly. You know, so, yeah, you know, exactly. I don't think he had any issues at all of being flexible.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about Nora's flexibility? Because I'm not even sure where to go with that.
Well, see, here's the thing. I really, and I said this already, but I appreciate Nora's enjoyment of life and her desire to just be free. Like, I think all of that is really great. And I think that she has a concept and an idea of how she wants Survivor to be played, which I can respect. It would be great if everybody could play an open and honest game, and if everybody can talk. But then if that's what you're doing, then you're not really playing Survivor. Then you're just sitting around a fire and you're kind of having a conversation about who needs to walk away from the fire now because everyone decided you need to go home. That's a different type of game, obviously. So I feel like Nora didn't really actually need to be flexible, because there was no reason for her to necessarily have to change a whole lot, because she was kind of, it was like the Nora show. Like, this is what Nora's doing. And she would tell everybody what she was doing. But I don't know if you can really call what she was doing as being flexible. It was, yeah, I guess you're right. There's really no good way to describe it. It's tough.
All right. Well, to round things out, I don't think Janet had a lot of flexibility. She was tight with her allies, but it didn't seem like she had a lot of sub-alliances. Mm. I mentioned earlier that she needed to work her way out of the bottom by going back to her closest ally, which tells me she didn't have too many options.
Yeah, and that's true, because she was in a very, very difficult spot and they wanted her gone. And I was surprised to see how she immediately went back to Dan, even though that was really kind of the reason for all of the chaos and the problems that Janet mm-hmm. was experiencing was because of Dan. And then there she is going back to Dan. So she was willing to forgive, willing to forget, but at the same time, maybe she didn't have very many other options. You're correct. So she went right back to the center of all of the problems that she really had.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on, the fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. And I think four out of five of our finale players did well here. Can you guess which one didn't?
Well, I will say this. I bet the guess is Nora.
Oh, you on the first try.
All right. But I will say this, too, that a lot of the people who were on the jury described Lauren as being a very emotional person as well, which I thought was interesting because I don't think we necessarily saw a lot of that in the game. But
right.
It sounded like people were very aware that she was an emotional person. So I guess that's good that she didn't let it seep into her game, but people knew mm-hmm. to expect it when she was at Ponderosa.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so yes, I was talking about Nora because several players talked about her acting emotionally, and we saw it throughout the game. I kind of hinted at this earlier because early on she had this kind of irrational hatred of Molly because Molly slept. That seemed to be the reason that she was mad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at other times she just swung whichever way her emotions told her to do it. And, you know, she got also mad at Karishma because Karishma, you know, dared to be sitting there and not out collecting coconuts. It kept happening.
Yeah, she was more aggressive in her approach with people than I think is expected when you are just getting to know someone. I think it was mm-hmm. probably the first episode that we saw her talking at Elaine and how she was really like unhappy with people around the camp and the lack of things that people were doing. And it was a lot. And I think that she came across as a lot very early because she was having that normal, I would say it's a normal reaction in the real world that you might get upset with somebody for something like that. But when you're playing Survivor, again, it's one of those things you got to just kind of sit back and say, okay, I'm not going to make this a big deal because I want to be able to continue to play this game.
Yeah. Now, I think the only other member of this group who acted emotionally was Janet. And that instance is not only forgivable, but honorable.
Yes.
Janet made a decision based on her moral character. And normally, of course, I'd say that's a bad idea. But this time was a big exception.
Yeah.
She said this was a vote not based on the game so much as based on standing up for what was right. And then also said, this is a moral decision that I'm making. I just have a personal emotional need to have these girls feel okay. So I'm going to do what's best for them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a extremely rare case where I applaud that type of thinking.
And I'm right there with you. I think everything that Janet represented in that moment throughout that episode and since, she is just the epitome of what a great human being really is. She was recognizing that there was a situation and she was able to separate herself from the game in a way that nobody else was able to do during that mm-hmm. moment. She did it. She stepped up. She did the right thing. Truly impressive. Incredibly impressive. So I fully commend her and applaud her as well.
Yeah. Now, Tommy and Lauren definitely kept emotion out of the equation. I mean, you mentioned Lauren being emotional, but it's one thing to be emotional and it's another to let it affect your decision.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Tommy specifically said he knew he couldn't let his emotions about Janet stop him from getting rid of her. And he said in interviews that his relationships were true, but it was easy for him to stick to gameplay. Going into the game, he said he would play hard like a sport and apologize later. And he did just that, regardless of friendships he made in the game.
Yeah.
And then Lauren similarly told Mike Bloom that normally she's an emotional person, like you mentioned, but she was able to separate the game from real life and take emotions out of it to just play. Coming in, she said she knew she had to control her emotions and slit people's throats, and that's what she did.
Yeah, I loved her pregame stuff because she was very, very clear that she understood what she needed to do. But both she and Tommy did a great job with it because they were willing to keep the emotion out of it, but not piss anybody off in the meantime as well. So it's very, the balance that they found was really impressive because they recognized that they needed to make the best decisions to get forward in the game, but didn't hurt people's feelings and didn't have to make apologies for it later. It was really incredible.
Yeah. Now, also Dean did well here as we saw how Kelly connected with him in part because of the person they knew outside the game, but that didn't stop Dean from getting rid of her right after she saved him.
Mm-hmm.
through the rest of the game, he was willing to cut whoever he needed in order to move along also.
Yes. He was willing to find Tommy's idol for him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I don't know about for him, but yes. All right. We can move on to the fifth rule, which is all about the social game and reminds players that they need to pretend to be nice. Now, this rule, combined with the first rule, is where we really separate out the winner from the runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tommy said at the beginning of the season that he wanted to connect with people one-on-one, get to know who they are, and connect with them. Near the end, he said his game was all about social play, and he'd been playing the game pretty dang well since day one. That certainly seems to have been the case, even if we didn't necessarily see it as much as other aspects of the season. I think it's just more difficult to show that kind of game on TV, especially with everything else that was going on.
Oh, now, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, maybe if they got rid of some of the idols and advantages, but I digress.
Right. Well, and the thing is this goes back to the whole big move-itis kind of thing. You know, that's what people, you know, that's great TV when you see these, you know, big plays and idol nullifiers and idols being played and all of these things. But Tommy was playing an authentic game that is very difficult to pull off, but not really the most entertaining thing to watch, because it's just a matter of talking to people and how much conversation can they really show of people talking and getting to know each other and forming bonds and relationships.
Well, more than they do.
I fully agree.
They can.
They
just choose not to.
They need more than 42 minutes.
Well, I don't think they do. They just need fewer idols and advantages and flashy crap.
That's true. But I do think if it was longer than 42 minutes, we would get more of that, too.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, you know, we know his social game was pretty good in part due to the way people kept warning him when he was in trouble. And of course, you know, interviews help us in this regard, too, such as Elaine saying, Tommy's the kind of guy where everybody likes him. He was such good friends with everybody and just like so normal and had a laid back kind of dude. So he had so many good relationships with everybody. And, you know, so we do have some information, even if it wasn't shown. Now, earlier I mentioned Lauren talking about why nobody voted out either her or Tommy, despite them being an obvious duo. And you mentioned this as well. And Lauren had said in that discussion that she thought it was a nod to their social games.
Mm-hmm.
She said, because we had such great friends in the game, they weren't willing to vote us out because we were a dynamic duo. And Nora told Mike Bloom that Tommy was just a fourth grade teacher. It was endearing and warm, and it made everyone feel good. Every single person felt they were in with Tommy. His social game was so much better.
Yeah, it's really incredible to see how they were both able to make it so far in this game and just have everybody like them so much. And that's something I mentioned earlier in the podcast. I love that Jamal said that about Tommy in particular. I feel like we are friends. He's just a nice guy.
Right.
Even though he didn't even know Tommy that much, he just felt it from Tommy. And that's a really incredible gift to be able to have. But then to bring it into a game like this and be able to pull it off where you've got six or seven options of, you know, your number two, and nobody's calling you out, nobody's throwing you under the bus, really speaks volumes of not only the communications you're having with the person, but how you are communicating with the person. Because clearly you're making that person feel a certain way. And once that person feels that way, it's a lot harder for them to say, yeah, let's vote that person out, if they've got a bond with you. And Tommy and Lauren were both very good at forming those bonds, but then also taking it to the next step and saying, well, but I'm not going to be emotional. I'm going to vote you out.
Right. Now, on the flip side, we mentioned earlier that Dean didn't talk much in the early goings, and that went beyond just strategy to social interactions as well. Mm-hmm. Tommy said on the show, Dean doesn't talk around camp. He just sits there and smiles and puts his hand through his hair.
Yeah. And tells people when he has to take a poop.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for his part, Dean told Rob he ignored too many people and didn't create relationships. He said in other interviews that if he could change one thing, it would be to forge relationships with everyone, and that his biggest problem was having non-relationships with people on the jury. Indeed, along the way, we saw things like Karishma calling Dean a snake because you can't trust him, and Nora saying he didn't make eye contact when you talked to him.
Mm-hmm. And he would flex and stretch before every tribal. So there's that. Hey,
you got to warm up.
That's true. No, I do think that Dean was someone actually described him as he sandbagged his way through the first half of the game and then charmed his way to the end. So it was almost like we saw a different side of Dean towards the end, where he was more outgoing and was talking more, but he still wasn't really connecting with people. And he recognized this, and you've already mentioned it, that, you know, when you're sitting across from a jury and there are people on that jury that still have no idea who you are as a person, it's going to make it more difficult for them to vote for you if they look at you and say, well, who are you exactly? Like, I don't understand Dean. I don't understand the game right. that Dean's playing. Whereas Tommy, I have a connection with. Like, I understand Tommy, or we communicated well, we had conversations. I don't know who you are. So regardless of all these big flashy moves that you're making and things that you've done at the end, I still don't know who Dean is. And that was really a huge struggle that Dean had to overcome. And it's impossible at that point, because so many days have passed and those people have already forged relationships with someone that's sitting directly next to you. That's going to make it a little bit easier for them to pick him over you.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we come to Nora. Molly said way back in episode 2, in Survivor, you need to bite your tongue, and Nora doesn't. You know, indeed, we saw Nora ranting and raving because her tribe didn't do enough work for her liking, and that continued throughout the game. As Elaine told Mike Bloom, everybody thought Nora was crazy. She was driving them nuts. But Molly called it early, saying this kind of behavior would undoubtedly make some of the others want to keep Nora around to take to the end.
Mm-hmm.
As for Nora herself, she told Mike, my social game was saying, I'm not a threat. I'm not going to tell you how intelligent I am. I'm not going to tell you I have an immense IQ. I'm not going to tell you what I did in college. I'm not going to tell you my first word was grapefruit. Like so much else with Nora, it's hard to know exactly what to make of that.
Well, I missed the grapefruit one. Where did that come from?
It was in the Mike Bloom interview.
That's amazing. You know,
she skipped right over Mama and Dada and went straight to grapefruit.
Grapefruit. That's impressive. That's impressive. Yeah.
I guess she's trying to say that she was downplaying her intelligence and that was her social game. I'm not really sure.
Well, and I have to give Nora some credit because I talked about this earlier, that she was really willing to own who she was. And this is what she says about herself. And she talked about it when her sister came out, that this is the way, you know, that Nora is. So this is Nora. And that's what we saw. We saw Nora, but Nora needed to bring it down a few notches, and because people don't have enough time to really understand you in a few days. You know, when you come out there and you're playing this game and you're all strangers and this is how you present yourself, it's a lot really quick, really soon, really fast. And that's the impression people will have of you for the time moving forward, for the rest of the game. Sometimes slow and steady is a little better approach when you're playing this game. And Nora was never slow and steady. Ever.
No, she wasn't.
No.
Well, now, Janet, of course, was pretty much beloved by all, but in a more obvious way than Tommy. I think one reason was the way she kept standing up for people and supporting them, no matter whether it hurt her game. She's really just an awesome person all around. So she certainly didn't have to pretend to be nice.
No, she really didn't. And I love that was recognized by people. And we're going to get into the sixth rule, but I love that it was also seen as a threat by people. Like, I think this is great that someone who's just a good person all around was someone who made people very nervous to sit in the final three with. And I love that Janet could say in her exit interviews that no one was going to beat me in the final three. And I think that's a really great thing for her to know. And I also think she got it ripped away from her, but we'll talk about that too. So
we'll
get there.
All right. For now, we'll go to the sixth rule, which warns against being too much of a threat. And both our first and second place players took this to heart, while our fourth and fifth place were shot down in large part because they couldn't avoid it. So both Tommy and Dean talked about making sure they didn't stand out early, with Tommy telling Rob his game was always to lower his threat level. He threw challenges because he was 6'4" and knew he looked threatening. You know, Dean similarly said he didn't want to be the smartest or stand out, and mentioned in a secret scene from episode 4 that he never wanted to be the guy stepping on toes or controlling people or the game.
Do you really believe all of that, though? Like, do you believe that they were throwing challenges?
I do. I mean, I don't know if they were throwing the tribal challenges.
Right.
I mean, like, Dean was on the puzzle, what, 2 or 3 times when they blew it?
Mm-hmm.
Was he throwing those so he wouldn't look intelligent? I would think not, because at the time, his tribe was trying to vote out the people who did poorly in in puzzles in particular.
Yeah, so it seems interesting.
I think it was the early, I mean, Tommy even mentioned he threw some of the early individual challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And then he admitted, and then when I decided to try to start winning them, I couldn't. But I do think both of them threw early, because, you know, who's getting voted out at Emerge? Everybody knows. It's the big challenge threat.
It's the errands. Yes, it's the errands. Mm-hmm. For sure.
So, yeah, I do believe it.
No, that's interesting. I do think that they both... It was Aaron actually said something about he thought that at some point Dean was going to be like a shield for him, but then he realized Dean wasn't winning anything, so it wasn't helping him at all. So the throwing the challenges, if that's what they were doing, or trying to appear less threatening, it clearly worked, because it kept him around until the end. So nobody was talking about voting them out because they weren't winning. So, if that's what they were doing, kudos to them, because it worked.
Yeah, and Tommy told Mike Bloom that he knew he was a social threat and didn't want to become a double threat. And, you know, and part of that would have been winning challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, Elaine was saying weeks ago that Tommy was the biggest threat because he had close ties with everybody. Missy said Tommy could win the game because he's a teacher, personable, and everybody loved him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the threat that doesn't get enough attention in this particular discussion. I think when people talk about threats, there seems to be this focus on the physical threat, and those are the people that we need to get rid of. And the people who are socially incredible at this game end up continuing to maneuver their way through because they're very good socially.
Yeah. Now, Dean, who wasn't, as we've already discussed, he also said to Mike that playing under the radar was the right strategy overall, and you can't be a big threat. And that's the main reason we saw both Janet and Lauren fall.
Mm-hmm.
Janet was first because, as Aaron said in the jury, it came down to the fire challenge. And then Kelly replied, nobody wanted to go against her.
I know.
Of course, the reason they didn't want to go against her, beyond just fear of losing at Final Four, was that she would win the fire challenge and then win the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, Dean recognized that Janet was a huge threat, saying she made fire, was everyone's mama, and had a great story. Nora said she's too well-liked and respected. And Lauren said Janet is a very strong woman and is a threat. I suppose Janet could have done something to reduce her threat level, like Tommy and Dean, but they were starting from different baselines. Those two did it in part to offset their physical appearance, whereas she had to show that she was worth keeping.
Yes.
Because it's just so standard to vote out the older woman early otherwise.
Yes.
So she kind of elevated her own threat level in order to stay in the game. And then eventually it came back to haunt her.
Yes. Which is so unfair that that's what ends up happening. But that was that. And that's what I talked about earlier, that she recognized those things about herself that would make her a typical target early on in the game, and flipped the script. Made fire, did all of these things that people would be, you know, surprised with. She speared a fish, I believe, too. I remember reading that somewhere, too.
Right.
So, like, this was someone who was all in physically, you know, mentally, emotionally, making connections with people. A huge threat to win. But she also, unfortunately, had to make herself that visible in order to stay in the game, just because she was the oldest member of her tribe. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, next up on the threat chart was Lauren. While Janet was there, she tried to make the case that Lauren was the biggest threat. And she said in a finale secret scene, Lauren needs to go because she's sociable, she's likable, and she's really good at the gift of words. Nora put her into fire making because she said she'd have the hardest case against her. And Dean called her a big threat because she was very sociable and liked by the jury. Plus, she had Tommy wrapped around her finger. And, you know, speaking of Tommy, he found Lauren to be a threat because they made almost all their moves together and he didn't want to split the final tribal council votes with her, which was a wise move on his part, as we've discussed earlier.
Absolutely. I think that Lauren was someone who, you know, she's the fourth place person that didn't win. You know, she's one of those. She's unfortunately in that category that's that individual that why the fire making came to be, if you will, because she's that person that if she was sitting there and sitting next to Tommy, especially, I think we would have seen her give Tommy a run for his money. She played an incredible game and was recognized for the social game that she brought to it. But I think she was even better at that social component because I think she formed stronger relationships with particular people that were on the jury that Tommy might have missed out on.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly would have been interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely.
So, all right. We can move on to the seventh rule, which covers idols and advantages because they've become so big a part of the game.
They become the name of the show.
Yes, but Tommy won without any of them.
I know.
He admitted in interviews that he did look for idols, but it obviously wasn't something he focused on. You know, Tommy was playing from my set of rules before I had to add this one because idols and advantages had become so prevalent.
Mm-hmm. I think it's incredible that on a season basically named for idols, that the guy who wins never had one.
Oh, yeah. I think it's incredible. Amazing.
I think it's so much fun. But I really do think that we have to give him a lot of credit because there's been a lot of, I think, very recent complaining about too many idols. And, you know, unfortunately, someone like Ben suffered with this a lot. He found a lot of idols in order to stay in the game. And that's what kept him around. Mike Holloway is someone I could talk about, too, winning a bunch of immunities to keep him in the game. And it's one of those situations that we see more often is that the person who's finding idols, who's winning immunities, is keeping themselves around, even though they're the number one target everyone's trying to get out. And then once they get to the final three, their argument is, look at me. Everybody wanted to vote me out since there was eight people left in the game. And I found idols and I won immunities and I did all of these things and I'm still here. And that speaks volumes of how I was playing this game. And I think it's interesting that Tommy pointed out, at least with idols, not necessarily immunity challenges, but idols, no, you found things.
Right.
Yes, you did. You found an idol. I'm not saying it's easy to find an idol, but he formed social bonds with people. You found something in a tree trunk. You know what I mean? So it's right. Like, it's a little, or you got a nullifier from flipping a coin. So it is a much different perception of the game when that's what got you to the end versus your social prowess that got you to the end of the game.
Yeah, and Dean did rely on them heavily, especially at the end of the game. You know, he was only there because Kelly gave him her idol to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made the fake advantage, which could have been a good move if the original advantage had actually been real, but it turned out to be meaningless. And his idol find at Final Five was also meaningless, though it did add a little bit of fun to the finale. Now, getting that idol nullifier, it was brainless the way it happened, but it was not meaningless because he used it to knock Janet out of the game.
Which is ridiculous.
Yes. As she told Mike Bloom, an idol nullifier with five people left is stupid. I didn't get taken out by gameplay. I got taken out by a coin flip. I even told Jeff that. With that few people left, no matter who that fifth person is or what they have, if there's a nullifier, they're done. Now, here's the thing. I mean, she's right. Don't get me wrong. She is right. But prior to now, many of us have argued that if you're going to have final four fire making, you should not have an idol that goes all the way up to final five.
Mm-hmm.
Because under normal circumstances, that means that someone like a Ben is all the way through. He's immune all the way through and you can't do anything to get rid of him.
Right.
And so on the one hand, should there have been an idol nullifier at that point in the game? I almost said earned, but not earned, given in the way that it was. No, Should Idols take you all the way to Final Five? Also no. So how about you get rid of the Idol Nullifier and you don't make Idols go all the way to Final Five?
And
then you have more people playing the actual game.
Right. And I do think that there's another component to this because there's so many things that are happening that directly affect the outcome of the game that don't take the gameplay to get there. And I think that this is a perfect example of it. You've got Dean who is given a choice of three different things, and it comes down to a literal coin flip in order to get an idol nullifier. Now, Janet, she found an idol because she was out searching and she ended up finding an idol, which is much more difficult than a coin flip. And yes, do you have to play it correctly in order for it to count? You do. But you're at a point in the game where both people know that once you get to five, that's it. You can't play it after this point. You can't play it at four. Like, you're at the point where you have to play it. And so you're at five. She's going to play her idol. He's going to play the nullifier. It takes away so much of the gameplay because it's not about gameplay at that point. It's about who's got the trinkets in their pocket in order to change up the ending. And if he didn't have the idol nullifier, we'd be having a much different conversation, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it would be
called Why Janet Won.
Right. And so I feel like it's a disservice to the game that people actually play when there are things added in that people don't know are coming, which is another thing. We've seen the idol nullifier once. No one knows that it's back in play. No one knows that. I mean, everybody knows idols exist and everybody is aware that idols are only good until five. But the idol nullifier, people even think about it? Did they even really know? I forgot that he even got it when I was so excited that Janet had this idol. And I was like, oh, my gosh, she's making the final four. She's going to make fire. She's going to win. And then my husband reminded me, but Dean's got the idol nullifier. So it's just an extra component that I don't love because it takes away so much of the actual game itself.
Yeah. Now, under my scenario, and it's not just mine, lots of people have said this, if there was no nullifier and idols could only be used to, let's say, final six, would Janet have still been voted out? Probably, but not necessarily, because we don't know how Janet would have played it differently if she didn't feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, could she have made some wheeling and dealing? Again, probably not, because she was the biggest threat. But at least give her an opportunity.
Right. Yeah. And unfortunately, we didn't have a six.
Right.
So, well, you know, that
unfortunately, whatever.
Right. Yeah. But so that throws another wrench in the works, too.
So
it's unfortunate.
Right, exactly. Now, yeah. Now, Nora also had some interesting run-ins with idols. A couple episodes ago, she stole Karishma's bag because she assumed Karishma would hide an idol there and further assumed that since it wasn't in the bag, that meant Karishma didn't have one, which was underestimating twice in one go. Prior to that, when she went to Island of the Idols, she came back with a fake idol that we didn't see, so we only know about this from interviews and the like. And Jason said in his exit interviews, we have no idea, no reason why. So on top of all this, she came back with this kooky fake idol and then admitted it was fake. Just total craziness, like bizarre.
Yes. This is her, I have an inability to keep a secret kind of gameplay.
Right. And, you know, now seems like a reasonable time to also mention her problems executing the task she received from Rob and Sandra, with Jason having said, execution of whatever she was trying to do was 20 times worse than even what you saw on television. You know, they figured out what was up and they were not going to risk losing because of her. So they sat her.
Right. Which, we got to give Lauren credit for that, too, because Lauren was like a boss right there and was like, Nora, sitting out. That was great.
Yeah.
That was very impressive. So got to give her props for that.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Lauren, she did win an idol from Rob and Sandra. While Janet then found one, which we talked about, after being the only player not to accept the Island of the Idols test, which was smart at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Lauren's idol went for naught, although she was smart to play it when she did. And we've already mentioned how Dean had an easy job nullifying Janet's. And, you know, she had some pretty strong feelings about that after the game.
Yeah, I don't blame her. She lost $1 million. There you go. Yep.
900,000.
No. Okay. Oh, yes. That's
true. She got the CEO award.
Yeah. Right.
Or at least we don't think so. Who knows? So, all right. We can move to Appendix B, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting, and in particular, voting out the weak and the strong, then the weak and the strong. Now, nearing the end, of course, the idea was to vote out the strongest remaining contenders. With Janet and Lauren leaving in fifth and fourth, that was exactly what happened. You know, the problem for Dean was that it just still left Tommy there.
Yeah, and the thing that was so fascinating is that he's the one who saved Tommy, because he's the one who told Tommy, everyone's planning on voting you out. And then look who's sitting next to him in the final three, and then beats him by a significant amount of votes. So got to kind of kick yourself for that one there, Dean, I think, just a little bit, because Tommy wouldn't be sitting there otherwise.
Yeah, but I mean, who would he have been sitting next to that he could have beaten?
Well, that's, you know? I mean, obviously, yes, this is a woulda, coulda, shoulda, what would have happened. Right. We can try to figure out all the computations of it. But I do think that Dean miscalculated how the jury was going to perceive his bling and everything that he had, you know, like found and was wearing, and, you know, the hair and the hand through the hair. Like, I think there was some belief in those components of his game that did not bode as well with the jury as he wanted them to.
Yeah. And that takes us to Appendix B, which is about the jury phase and both bringing people along you can beat while seating the jury with those who will vote for you. Plus, of course, making solid jury arguments. And Tommy really did a great job in all three areas, whereas Dean, maybe not so much. You know, we already talked about Tommy's social game and how he was on good terms with everyone, which certainly helped when those same people had to decide whether or not to vote for him. And bringing along Nora was a given as someone who was easy to beat. I think Tommy believed Dean would be about as easy also until Dean turned it on near the end. But in Dean's own words to Mike Bloom, it was absolutely too little too late.
Yeah, I mean, he walked into that final tribal thinking that he was going to have it locked, you know, 10-0, and he was going to get every vote. But then I do think that he started to realize, oh, I didn't know that Dean had this and Dean did that and all of these things that Dean had done, which I think all of us spent the entire episode going, what is happening with Dean? like he just went from 0 to 60 real quick. And I think Tommy spent the entire final tribal doing the same thing. But kudos to Tommy, because he didn't let that affect his ability to make his points and get them across and still kind of take Dean down a few notches while doing so, but not doing it in a snarky kind of way, just kind of reminding the jury, well, what does all of that mean versus what did I do in the relationships that I created with all of you? So I think it was good that he didn't get flustered. Nora got flustered. So, you know, that's obviously probably was an issue for her, because I know some people were considering voting for her, but she did get flustered for sure.
I don't think anyone really was, but yeah, Tommy somewhat followed the path of Sarah Lacina in his jury arguments, being unapologetic about his gameplay and taking credit for the moves he made. You know, he did an excellent job of explaining his game, and maybe more importantly, he owned his game.
Yes.
You know, several jurors talked about how critical that was, and only Tommy did it. He said in interviews that he made it a point at Final Tribal Council where he straight up said to Janet and Lauren, for example, I'm not a charity. We all came out here to win $1 million. I guarantee you told your family that you came out here to lie and steal. And he said their relationships were true, but he just couldn't go to the end with them. And he responded well to the challenges that he faced in this tribal council. When it was suggested that Dean saved him, he replied that it showed how good his social game was.
Yes.
He also, you know, he also noted his abilities of getting Nora to take him to the end and pointed out that winning the game isn't about who can make fire, you know, or for that matter, idols and challenge wins. He said immunity necklaces and idols are curses. People will attack you. Immunity necklace protects you for one night. He said his game was social. He learned about advantages to control the game and he played hard and made a ton of moves through alliances and crossing lines. He didn't need an immunity necklace, and he still got there. That's what the game is all about.
Yeah, the fact that you don't need any of those things to get to the final three is truly impressive about the type of game he's playing. But it's not even that you don't even need those things. It's a fact that you don't need them, and you played an impressive game on top of it. You know, because we do see people that get to the final three that don't need any of those things because they are brought along. They are considered a goat. He was neither of those things. He was deciding who was going to continue on in the game with him, and really shows a side of Survivor that I miss. I think we need to see more of is less idols and less trinkets thrown into the game and more of those social relationships that really create what is the beautiful, like, society of Survivor. When you're out there with strangers and suddenly you need to get to know this person, you need to form an alliance with someone who you're, like, literally just meeting for the first time. It's really incredible when you're able to pull it off as well as Tommy did. And Lauren, for that matter, too, because she was right alongside with him. So I think his presentation of the game that he played, he did an excellent job in that final tribal, really getting people to understand what Dean did is not that significant. It looks flashy and it looks great on TV, but it is not what I was doing was much harder than finding things and winning immunities.
Yeah, and Dean could really only push the things he did late in the game. He tried making the case that a true fan should respect him for getting advantages in Idol, but that wasn't going to fly, especially when Tommy came firing back by saying things like, those are not moves, you found things.
Right.
And, you know, Dean also said in his interviews that Tommy did an amazing job of calling him out and saying his bling was just souvenirs he was going to take home in his pockets. And when Dean tried to argue, social and strategic game, he shot himself in the foot big time by contradicting himself. He said he wouldn't promise final two to people if he didn't mean it. And he did it for multiple people on the jury.
Right. And people were frustrated with that. And I think that that's another component of Tommy's game that was so great, is that he didn't have to lie to people. Like you've already said, he owned his game. So there was almost a respect factor there that, hey, you voted me out, and I understand why you did. I think Janet even called him out, like, when did you decide that you were going to cut me, kind of thing, and put him on the spot. And he was able to compliment her and get her to understand that I had to get you out because you were such a threat to me. You were going to beat me if we're sitting here. So you make the person sitting on the jury feel good about themselves. They feel good about the game that they played, and you're the one complimenting them. So I think Tommy did a really great job in kind of maneuvering all of those components, the people who were hearing his answers and the way that Dean was presenting things. He was flipping that around and presenting it back to the jury in a light that made Dean look not so impressive for what he had pulled off at the very end of the game.
Yeah. And, you know, Dean mentioned in interviews that he was playing from behind the moment he stepped foot into that final tribal council. He was already down three jurors because he hadn't talked strategy, or really even socially, with several people on the jury. He admitted, how do I expect to go into final tribal council and win already down 3-0?
Yeah. So this is why you got to give props to Tommy, because he started from day one forming those relationships.
Right. Now, as for Nora, well, she was doomed before final tribal council even started. I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that as soon as I saw the jury's reaction to her, I knew she was done. Now, Nora, of course, doesn't quite see it that way. I know it will come as a shock that she and I do not agree on something game related here. She told Rob she didn't do a good job defining her game at the end, and told Mike that the problem was she didn't speak to how well she did in all three areas because she was the best at outwit, outplay, outlast. Again, she talked about how Survivor has evolved where you want a strategist. And again, I just want to bring up one name, Richard Hatch. It's not an evolution to say the best strategist should win. I've been saying it for almost 20 years now. So I don't think it was that Nora didn't do well speaking to these areas, but rather simply that she didn't know what the jury was looking for because she still didn't really understand the game.
Yeah. She did talk about something in some of her exit press, too, about the way in which she was presenting herself during that final tribal, mm-hmm. and that she didn't come across as confident and strong, and that that was part of her problem, and that kind of welcomed the attack, as she called it, that she was receiving from people on the jury. And I do think that this is an interesting point, because we've talked about it a lot, and she mentioned it too, you know, perception is reality. And if you present yourself in a fashion that shows you're strong in your opinions and you're strong in what you believe your game was and how you played the game, which didn't seem very Nora-like, that she shut down and didn't present herself in that way. And I do think that at times when people are sitting in the final three, they end up getting a mixed reaction, if you will, from the jury with how they are arguing their points. And I think that Nora is somewhat correct in her assessment of herself and how she presented herself. Not necessarily what she was saying, but just the manner in which she was saying it. I've got to agree with her there a little bit, because she did get flustered and she didn't know how to respond to what was being thrown back at her. Whereas Tommy did a good job responding. Dean did a good job responding with what was being thrown back, whereas she wasn't necessarily able to do so as well.
Well, and I agree. I think part of it is because Tommy and Dean knew what to expect because they know the game. And I think another thing to note is I don't think it would have mattered. I think she could have been as confident as can be, and it would not have changed things at all.
No, and I don't disagree with you on that. I don't disagree.
Right, right. So, all right. Well, it is about time to wrap things up here. So what are your final thoughts?
Well, listen, I'm going to be brief because I know that you are going to bring it home on this group. But I do have some final thoughts. And this is a fun little thing I came up with. I couldn't help but think to myself, this final five group is kind of like the Breakfast Club. And for anybody who doesn't know the Breakfast Club, you're clearly not old enough to be, you know, watching Survivor.
Do you know where the Breakfast Club was filmed?
Oh, I did. Go ahead.
A sister high school to the one I went to.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's so fascinating. So here's the Breakfast Club. This is the final five. And how did they describe themselves in that final letter to their principal? A brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, and a criminal. And I just thought to myself, it's kind of representative of what we see here. Now, I will leave it to you to decide who's who, but I will say that this was, I know, right? This was such a great final five because we did have such an extreme difference in personalities. Even though we spent a lot of time talking about how Tommy and Lauren played a very similar game, Tommy and Lauren are also very different people in how they were forming these relationships and bonds with people. So I love the fact that we saw five very different people make it through this game as far as they did. Two of those people, one being the winner, one being, I'll say, Janet, someone who would so unexpected. You know, Tommy won this game because Tommy was socially incredibly great. Lauren, I could say the same thing about. And you've got Janet, someone who from the start people thought, well, she's going to be an early boot because of who she is. She's an older woman. And Nora, the same thing. Nora was going to be the first to go. She's in the final three. Dean, we didn't even know much about Dean. And all of a sudden, Dean comes in at the end with his trinkets and his bag of tricks and all of these things that end up getting him to the final three. So I think it's such an incredible mix that we got to see. And I love that everyone was so different in the way that they approached the game, even though, I've already said, Lauren and Tommy were playing a very similar game. So overall, my assessment of the final five, congrats. You all played an incredible game. You were very entertaining to watch. Tommy, I think you knocked it out of the park because Tommy brought it back old school, and I really miss old school Survivor. So I'm glad to see that somebody won this game who didn't have immunities, who didn't have idols, who didn't have idol nullifiers, and was able to actually win based solely on the social gameplay that they had. And I think it's great that Lauren probably would have won the game if she had been sitting there, not next to, or maybe next to Tommy, for the same reason. and the fact that Janet could have won this game and would have won this game if she was in there because of the person that she is. I think those three people really show the heart of what Survivor is and what we're kind of missing in Survivor. We're missing that social component of the game, not so much immunities and idols and extras, but just the social aspect of this game. So there's my Breakfast Club group. I'll let you explain away, David, why Tommy won and everybody else lost.
Yeah, I mean, you said, you know, that Tommy played the old school type of game, and he played a game according to these rules better than perhaps any other U.S. player in recent history. He didn't need immunity challenge wins or idols or advantages or even a trip to talk to Sandra or Boston Rob. He played the good old-fashioned social strategy game. Kelly, a self-described Survivor purist herself, said in a post-game interview that Tommy played an amazing strategic game. Everyone thought he was their best friend, and he was close to all of them. The jury had to respect that. Tommy said he wasn't playing to make best friends, he was playing to win. To get to that point, though, he had to take out the two biggest threats in Janet and Lorne. Janet wasn't as apparently strategic, but she was the most beloved figure in the game, and she was also the known firemaker. Many of us thought she might be one of the first ones out, but she ended up being, as Jeff said, the most feared. Lorne was next on the list of the big threats that Tommy knew he had to remove, and he maneuvered and manipulated Nora into doing his dirty work for him. Even though Dean revealed that Tommy was helping him to learn to make fire, Lorne still had to stand by her partner through so much of the game. Nora said that she was not a typical Survivor fan, and I certainly have to agree with that. But her misunderstanding of what the jury wanted compounded the problem she already had that caused her to be taken as an easy person to beat at the end. Dean made his run at the title, but he started too late and based it only on challenge wins and trinkets. Maybe if he'd had last season's jury, he could have won. But this season, they valued actually playing the game for all 39 days. In the end, I'm happy for Tommy winning for a number of reasons, but mostly because it shows you don't need idols and advantages and big moves. In the end, it's the strategic and social game. And as we've always said, the little moves matter most. Tommy made all those little moves, earning trust, gaining allies, and staying at the center of everything throughout his whole time there. And that is why Tommy won and everyone else lost.
Perfect. I think that's great. And I think you just mentioned what our hashtag was going to be. It's kind of a long one, though.
Well, okay. Normally, we just do the Why Tommy Won hashtag.
I know, but
we can do another one.
We got an extra one.
What's the extra one?
Little moves matter most.
Little moves matter most. All right.
I like
that. We can have that, too. Yes. That could be our hashtag, like, every time. But sure.
Well, in particular here.
Get that out into the world.
Right.
Yes, we'll start now.
Yes, I like that.
So
we don't have to do predictions. Oh, my goodness.
That's right. No predictions.
Oh, thank God.
I did want to mention one thing that I just thought of in terms of, and it doesn't specifically relate to Tommy's win. It more relates to the filming and showing of it, which is that Jeff Probst did at least one interview afterwards, and he was talking about how the heart of Survivor is the social aspect of things. And all I could think of while reading it is, then why don't you show that more?
Yes, and why don't you get rid of some of the idols?
Yeah.
I mean, so I love idols. They saved me.
Yeah.
Less is more.
Right, right. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
I think it's a good point.
So as we wrap up, I do want to encourage people to check out two things at Rob Has a Website. First is the RHAP link to Amazon and Walmart at robhasawebsite.com/shopping. If you haven't gotten your holiday gifts yet, yeah, you're probably screwed.
Mm.
But I know some people like to wait till the last minute or even later. So if you're one of those people, go to robhasawebsite.com/shopping and click on the appropriate store banner to help support RHAP. Or you know what? Do it anytime. It doesn't have to be for the holidays. Also, if you've been listening to all the RHAP podcasts over this season of Survivor and would like to take your fandom one step further, remember you can become a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Rob does so many special things for patrons, including podcasts, first access to live show tickets, and much more. I think on Friday, he did a Facebook Friday that was like 3.5 hours long.
Yeah, he does a lot.
You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so that's part of the Facebook group. And you'll also find a great community of people you can talk to there about Survivor, Big Brother, etc. He's going to be doing podcasts on the Netflix show that was big in England, and I am blanking on the name of it. So, but he's covering it, and I'll be watching it. I just cannot remember the name of it right now. Remember to go to these two locations. robhasawebsite.com/shopping and robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to those Facebook groups, make sure to say hello. And no need to remind me of whatever that show is, because I'm sure I will remember before anyone hears this.
And listen, you can also say hi to David Bloomberg and I on Twitter. David is at David Bloomberg and I am at Jessica Lewis 89. Be sure to follow both of us, because then you do get both sides of the conversation. And it is much more fun when you do so. Also, we live tweet during the episodes, which are sadly now coming to an end until we get to season 40. And then you should definitely follow both of us so you can be involved in all of those fun conversations, too. So that is at David Bloomberg or at Jessica Lewis 89. And I shouldn't say or, because it should be both. So follow us both.
And
yes. That's right.
Right. And before we finish, I want to remind everyone about the poster we discussed earlier, which covers all the rules. Again, you can go to tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster. Only a few left.
Yes. So get on that.
Yes. And make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts for season 40 at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or through your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed. In both places, you can find great content like the Know-It-Alls, This Week in Survivor, the B&B, and much more.
And we now need to say thank you to Scott St. Pierre. This is our last episode of this particular season. Thank you, Scott. You do all of the editing on Why Blank Lost, and we truly appreciate it. Also, thanks to Will from America for the incredible theme song. And David, thank you for our final episode of Why Someone Won, as opposed to Why Someone Lost, even though we still talked about why four people lost. But this has incredibly fun, as always. And it is a very long podcast. Thank you, everyone, for hanging in there. We do appreciate it. And we will definitely be back soon, right?
Yes, yes. So also thanks to you, Jessica, for not just a great episode, but the whole season, difficult as it was sometimes.
Ditto.
I think that you definitely helped a lot of people out as we were talking through some of these things.
I think you did the same. So thank you.
No. Yes, we will have another postseason Q&A podcast after Christmas. As we mentioned, we're shooting for just before New Year's. Hopefully we will. We'll get one more podcast out this decade. And, again, start sending in your questions now.
Excellent. Have a great holiday season, everyone.
Yes, have a good holiday, and we will hopefully talk to you before New Year's. Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost.